Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome to our shiur once again. I would like to first announce that today's shiur is being dedicated by Mrs. Jennifer Lehrfeld, Zecher Nishmas. Her father recently passed away, Moshe Ben Yitzchok Halevi. Moshe Ben Yitzchok Halevi, for his neshama. Now, I was tempted to begin today's shiur by wishing everyone a happy new year, but that will depend on the outcome of what we decide here. The topic of today's shiur, keeping up with the Inyan of the Yoma and keeping up with the spirit of the time, is it permissible in halacha to use secular dates? We know that it's very common. We all very often have the occasion to write dates. A person writes a check or write a contract, many different situations on personal correspondences. We put dates, and the question is there anything in the halacha, is there any possible objection halacha? Now, it's obviously very, very widespread. The truth of the matter is, it's probably more widespread in the last recent probably 100, 200 years because of the fact that Jews have been more welcomed into the secular culture, secular society in that period of time. Prior to that, when Jews were pretty much relegated to living completely amongst themselves and not so welcomed into the world of secular commerce, so it was clearly the minhag of Jews to write to each other in their own correspondences and in their own contracts, they would write the Hebrew dates. Okay, with today, the Hebrew date, it would be hard to, if you stop the person today on any given day and ask them what is the Hebrew date, most people would be hard pressed to even know what it is. So clearly we've seen, in fact, I only know that today is the sixth day of Teves, because of the fact that Harvey put it on the email that he sent out. So this clearly reflects a change in the conduct of the Jewish people. And the question is there any issue in halacha about this? So the truth of the matter is that for many centuries, no one heard anything, no commotion was made over this. Could be for the reason that I gave, that it wasn't so common that Jews did, it wasn't at nearly as common as today that Jews did business with non-Jews, and therefore it may not have been such an issue, but we do find, and I saw myself in my research, I came across a tshuva, the Tshuvas Ramah, that was written by the Ramah in the 16th century, where he, in the 17th century that is, where he dates a tshuva, he gives the English date. And so too we have in the tshuva, we have in the writings of the Shach and other people, that we find, we come across situations where they gave a mention to the English date. It's very interesting that if one looks, you'll see that they mention the English date, but the Hebrew year, which is what I'm going to get to in a minute. But so I guess what I would like to explore would be the full spectrum. Is there anything wrong with using the month? Is there anything wrong with using the year? And is there anything wrong with numbering the months? In other words, we will consider if a person was writing something today, so obviously today some people would write January 1st, 2012, other people would write 1-1-12, or 1-1-2012, today I have to write all four digits in the year. So is there anything wrong with any of these scenarios? So the first objection that we find, and really the main objection that we find, came about approximately 200 years ago. One of the Gedolim, one of the great Gedolei Rabbanim in Hungary, Rav Moshe Schick, known as the Maharam Schick, he was one of the great students, perhaps the greatest student of the Chassam Sofer, and he was asked a shaila, which actually on the handout we have, it's not on page 1, but it could be found on page 4, but I excerpted it, so we, source number 4, excuse me, on page 2. The Maharam Schick was asked the following shaila, very fascinating shaila, and that is that in the he was notified that someone had passed away recently in his town, and they had erected a monument to this person at the place of his kever. And in that cemetery, the minhag apparently was that everybody wrote on the matzevas only everything in Hebrew and only Hebrew dates. And this particular family was unclear who was responsible, but they wrote the matzeva in Hungarian, so they used obviously they were going away from the Lashon HaKodesh, they were going away from the Hebrew terms. And not only that, but they went ahead and put the date of this person's passing in English. Not in English, in the secular. And that is, they wrote, for example, June 5th, 1821. And the question was, the Chevra Kadisha in this town was irate because they had not been consulted on this matter and this broke with tradition. And they asked the Maram Shik if they should do anything about it. Should they considered even the possibility of taking some sort of substance, mud or whatever it may be, and covering over some of the writing on the matzeva, because they were so upset at what this person had done. This was the Shiloh that was asked to the Maram Shik. So in the beginning of the tshuva, which is not here on the sheet, so he discusses the fact that it was wrong what they did, because they should have done it, they should have consulted the Beis HaKvaros, especially at that time, was under the local authority of the Chevra Kadisha, and therefore not to consult with them and to just go ahead and break with tradition. So the Maram Shik felt was very wrong for them to do. But then, towards the end of the tshuva, he addresses the fact that they used the secular date. So says the Maram Shik a remarkable thing. If you look at from the fourth line on the, actually from the third line, he says the fact that they used the secular dates here, he says, Hareza Avera Kfula Mechupelas, he says, this is a double sin. This is a big Avera. Why? He says, the Mitzvah HaChadoshim Shelahem Eina Mechuvanim Mitzvah B'nei Yisrael. Says the Maram Shif 2 points. He says, number one, the count of the months is not counted the same way that we count them. In other words, today, on the secular dates, if you wanted to write the month, you would write 1 for the month of January. But a Jew who goes by the Torah, so what month would correspond with 1 would be Nisan. Because, as we will discuss later, the Torah says, HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. So therefore, he's saying that they're going ahead and breaking with the Torah. The Torah says, this is not the first month. You're saying that today is the first month? It's not. That's point number one, but that's the minor points which we'll get to later on. But then he says, Umasha Saimu b'mispar hashonim l'mispar hanotzri, says the Maram Shik, but the bigger issue is that when they're putting the year, so what is the year corresponding to? When we say today is January 1st, 2012, 2012 from what? What are we counting back from? So says the Maram Shik that they are counting back with Mispar HaNotri, which is the Christian count. This is the Christian count which apparently corresponds in some way or in some manner to the life of Jesus, who we will, the purpose of Shir here to for refer to as Yeshu HaNotri. Okay, but that's what it's corresponding to. That's what it's corresponding to. So says the Maram Shik, L'dayti zeh iser daraisa. Says the Maram Shik, in my opinion, this is a violation of a Torah law. Why is that? Sharei HaTorah, the Parshas Mishpatim, it says in Parshas Mishpatim, a pasuk which is relatively obscure when we read Parshas Mishpatim, that's filled with many halachas, and we don't pay attention to the pasuk that we find that's on the previous page, in Perek Chav Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Torah says, V'chol asher amarti aleichem tishomeru, v'shem Elohim acherim lo saskiru, lo yishama al picha. The Pasuk says, Shem Elohim acherim, the names of other gods, lo saskiru, you should not mention, lo yishama al picha, it should not be heard on your tongue. So says the Torah, the names of other gods you should not mention. So what does that mean? So like all psukim, it needs clarification. So we find here, again, on the previous page, source number 3, we find the Gemara tells us in Masechet Sanhedrin, of San Gimel Amud Beis, says the Gemara, I know there b'shmo, v'amakayim b'shmo, this Gemara is referring to a Mishnah previously, which had said that a person who makes some sort of oath by the name of Avodah Zarah is prohibited to do such a thing. Says the Gemara, I mean, no one, from where do we know this? The Tanya, because it says in the Braisa, V'shem Elohim Acherim Lo Saskiru, the Gemara quotes this pasuk and says, you know what this pasuk teaches us? Shelo Yomar Adam L'Chaveiro, that a man should not say to his friend, Shmor Li B'tzad Avodas Kochav Implonis. A man should not say to his friend, I'll meet you, we're going together on some sort of trip, I will meet you by the side of this Avodah Zarah. In other words, to say to someone, I'll meet you, I'll pick you up right in front of the church, and then we'll go to whatever, wherever we're headed, says the Gemara, a person should not do that. Why shouldn't a person do that? Because that would be a violation of this pasuk, b'shem Elohim acher lo saskiru. You should not reference other gods. Okay, now the truth of the matter is, the example that I gave is not exactly true to the Gemara's example. I said the church. The Gemara says, B'tzad Avodah Zarah Plonis, which would mean, and this may make a difference, where a person says, I will meet you by the side of this Avodah Zarah, and he mentions the Avodah Zarah by name. So for example, just to take one that we find in the Torah, right? So in the Torah we have the Avodah Zarah, Baal Pa'or, probably the most famous one mentioned in the Chumash. So if a person were to say, I will meet you, or I will pick you up, whatever, you want directions, make a left turn when you get to Baal Pa'or, right? So that is a violation of Shem Elohim Acherim Lo Saskiru. This is the Gemara. So now returning to the Maran Shik, so he says, well, if that's the case, so what is the Torah telling us? The Torah apparently is telling us that a person should not reference an Avodah Zarah. A person should not, even in passing, in other words, the chiddush of this pasuk is obviously to give honor to Avodah Zarah outright, to worship Avodah Zarah. Clearly, that everybody knows is prohibited. But here, you're not really giving any honor. You're just mentioning it in passing. But because of the fact that you're mentioning it, so says the Gemara, this is a violation of the Isser. This is Shem Elohim Acherim Lo Saskiru. Just simply to say that let's meet in front of this idol, this and this idol, would be a violation of the Isser. So says the Maram Shik, well, if that's the case, then to give the secular year, since that is referencing the Avodah Zarah of the Goyim, right, that is the years revolve around that. So, and he quotes here the Gemara, that the Asul Amul Chavero, etc. So, he says, U'midunaka v'loshon hifil saskiru mashma shafilu eno maskir mamish gam kein hu b'chlau iser. So, says the Maram Shik, that in his opinion, and we'll see this is debatable, perhaps, that it's mashma that even if you're not actually mentioning it, in other words, the Maram Shik says that even if you might argue, and we will see that perhaps this argument could be made, that when you're writing the year 2012, you're not mentioning any Avodah Zarah. 2012 is just an association. But the Maram Shik feels that it would be no different. The Hamona b'misparam nira l'fi ani azdaiti da'over b'isr shehu l'shem alim achem. As the Maram Shik, the Saskiru ha'inu b'tel b'ksav, he says, even though the word Saskiru in the Torah means either to articulate it or to write it, but nevertheless, he says, Mikol makom kiven da'yidei ha'minyan olal azikar and machshava nira da'oser. Says the Maram Shik, but even though you're not writing it and you're not mentioning it, you're only saying something which is associated with it, but nevertheless, since it brings to mind the Avodah Zarah, says the Maram Shik, Zil Batzer Taima. We have to go by the spirit of the law. The spirit, now, if you want to start being technical and saying, well, you didn't say it, You didn't say it. I just wrote the year. And you know, the writing the year is not saying that Avodah Zarah at all. It's not articulating it even in terms of writing. But the fact of the matter is, Zil Basa Taima, we have to go by the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law is that you should not be mentioned. It should not be referenced. So when you're going to write the secular year, says the Maram Shik, you are referencing the Avodah Zarah, and as such, it should be prohibited. This is what he wrote, and this is the strongest that we find in the poskim. And I say the Maram Shik, it's very interesting, the Maram Shik lived in the beginning of the 19th century, the early 1800s, early to mid-1800s, you'll say, well, what was prior to that? How come the Shiloh, they first discovered the Shiloh in the 1800s, what was before that? So it's hard to know. The Maram Shik, we know that the Chassam Sofer and his students waged war against the Reform movement in their part of Europe. That was an all-out war that was raging in Hungary, that to a very large degree they were successful in stemming the tide of Reform, which spread through other parts of Europe. So one could say perhaps that this was, you know, because in those times this was becoming more of an issue, but as Jews attempted to, you know, become more like Goyim and to assimilate more, so it became more of an issue. But whatever the case may be, he's raising a point. He's not, you know, you can't just say, well, this is his kanos, this is his, you know, extremism. The fact is, he's quoting an Isser that's mentioned in the Chumash and in the Gemara. So what do we do about this? So the truth of the matter is that this has been discussed quite a bit in more contemporary times. Many poskim, especially in our day, has been discussed. Rav Avadia Yosef, which is Shir, is based largely on the Shir that is printed in his Sefer Yabia Omer. So we find that this has been discussed by a number of people, and they present a number of defenses, a number of approaches to the practice that we have of writing the secular days. And the first one is which gets into the question, which has been a long debated question, of do the years in fact correspond to the life of Yeshua Nozri? Is that in fact the truth? It happens to be there's a great debate between Jews and non-Jews when exactly this person lived, and many in Klal Yisrael, this is a very debated point, and there are many opinions. You could find pretty much any opinion you want on this, but there are many people that claim that the Yeshua Nozri did not live at the time that the Christians believe that he did, and that in fact he lived well before that, over 100 years before that time. And as such, the dating that we have, the secular dates, is really false because of the fact that if in fact it is associated with his life, the claim in traditional Judaism has been long made that he didn't live in those years. And what's pointed to is a Gemara here in Maseches Sota, which is on the first sheet, a well-known Gemara, which, now just as a preface to this Gemara, we have to understand that the Shas went through, like many Sfarim over the generations, went through censorship, and from the time that printing presses came into the world, and it, you know, very often the printing presses were owned by non-Jews, so there was a lot of scrutiny that went into the writings of the Jews and Halacha. And we find that in many, many Svarim, there were things that were censored out. In virtually every Sefer, as recently as in the late 1800s, we have the very very popular Svarim, Aruch HaShulchan, that was written by Rabbi Chil Michel Epstein, one of the great poskim of the late 1800s, which is heavily relied upon in day-to-day halacha to this day. And he is the Rav of Navardik, who lives in Russia. And He is clear in his Sefer, if you read certain sections, where anything that comes up with dealings with Goyim, you will see that he writes that anything that the Torah says in any way that portrays non-Jews in a less than favorable light, so he always writes, well, that doesn't mean today, that's talking about the old idolaters, not today, idolaters today we have a whole different, the non-Jews are different, and this is because there was a great deal of censorship that went into the writings, especially writings of halacha, and the most basic book of halacha that we have is the Shach. So therefore, we have Gemaras, that we have a tradition that the Gemara may have been tampered with, or perhaps things were taken out, or things were omitted. We have today a sefer which is printed called Chisronos HaShas. The Chisronos HaShas provides Gemaras that had been censored out, that today people feel comfortable, you know, in the spirit of religious freedom, you could pretty much say anything you want. So therefore, today we have printed up these farm, and they are available. But this Gemara that we're about to read, the claim is made in the Masorah that this Gemara was subject to some censorship, and as we will see, the Gemara says the following, the very famous Gemara, which the point of this Gemara is to teach that a person has to be, the Chazal say, that lo'olam te'adam yamin makarev u'smol dochek. The Gemara says that a person, that when dealing with others, especially a teacher with a student, it is, even if a teacher sometimes has a Rebbe, has the right or the reason to be very upset at one of his students, one of his Talmidim, but he should never just push him away. The Gemara says that if you're going to have to, even in a situation where you have to distance yourself from somebody, but it should be yamin makarev, the small docha. You push the person away with your left hand, but be makarev the person with your right hand. Meaning that you have to balance it out. As much as you may have reason to be upset and to be angry, but you can't just yell and scream and tell the person, get lost. That's not the correct approach. Rather, what a person should do is to, you have to make your point, you have to stand up for what's right, as we mentioned a few weeks ago, the prohibition of Hanifa, you can't just justify wrong actions, but at the same time, you have to be makar of the person also. When you're rebuking someone, you have to also be makar of them, because otherwise you will lose them completely. And the Gemara says that this lesson was learned the hard way in Jewish people, but in the history of the Jewish people, on two occasions. And the second of them is the story of Yeshua ben Parachia. So you may be familiar from Pirkei Avos that we have listed off the rabbis of the Masorah in the very beginning of the first chapter of Pirkei Avos. So we have listed off Yeshua ben Parachia is the name of one of the zugos, one of the pairs of rabbis from in the era of the second Beis Hamikdash. And the Gemara says the following story. So we know, those who are familiar with the Seches Kedushin know that amongst the kings of the Chashmonaim, we just celebrated Hanukkah, so amongst the Chashmonaim at the origin, there were great tzaddikim, obviously the people who fought fought for the Klal Yisrael against the Greeks, against the Yavonim. But unfortunately, the Hasmonean dynasty was tainted, and unscrupulous individuals came about that after the initial flurry of tzaddikim, then others came into play, and one of them was a man by the name of Yanai, who was the king. And Yanai, for a reason that I don't want to go into, Yanai, the rabbis questioned his lineage and his whether he was fit to be a Kohen. He put himself up as a Kohen also. The Chashmonaim obviously were Kohanim, but he put himself up to be the Kohen Gadol. And the rabbis felt that for certain reasons he should be disqualified, and he got angry at them, and as such, he went on a mission of vengeance, and he killed every rabbi that he could get his hands on. So because of that, due to this persecution, so a number of the prominent rabbis of the time ran for their lives. So included in that was his brother-in-law, who was a very famous man by the name of Shimon ben Shattach. Shimon ben Shattach, who is also mentioned in the Mishnah in different places. So Shimon ben Shattach was, his sister was the wife, amazingly enough, was the wife of Yanai. So he was the brother-in-law of the king, but he had to run. The fact that he was the brother-in-law did not spare him. It could be that the fact that he was his brother-in-law made it even worse, but the fact of the matter is that he had to run for his life. So it says that Atzmininu Ache, but in his case, his sister managed to hide him. He didn't have to run. He did not have to go to a foreign country, as we'll see others did. But his sister hid him. She arranged for him to be in some sort of seclusion. So says the Gemara, however, Rabbi Shua ben Prachya had to run, and Arak Alexandria shel Mitzrayim, so he ran to Alexandria in Egypt. So eventually, he stayed there in hiding, and eventually things began to settle down. So Shimon ben Shattach, who was closer to home and had a better idea of what was going on in the local scene, so when things were quieting down, Shimon ben Shattach tried to send a message to Yeshua ben Prachya that it's safe to return. We can come back now. It's okay. The period of danger is over. So I won't read every word in the Gemara, but basically it says here that Shalach Leishem Mishra Mini Yerushalayim Mirakodesh L'chot Alexandria Shal Mitzrayim. Right? He says that I'm sending this letter to you, this correspondence from the holy city of Jerusalem to you who's in Alexandria. And, he sent him a little bit of a veiled message, and which implied to Yeshua ben Prachya that it was safe to come back. So I'm going to skip here two lines. So on the way back, Yeshua ben Prachya had to stay over. He couldn't make it. It was not a one-day trip from Alexandria back to Jerusalem. So he had to stay over at an inn. So it says, he also, as he was returning, Ikla lahu shpiza. So he entered into a hotel. They didn't have in those days the Hyatt or the Hilton or the Ramada. He stayed in a Jewish-owned inn. And this is where Yeshua ben Prachya entered with one of his students that we'll see in a minute. So says the Gemara, so kam kamayu biyakara, so he was treated royally in this hotel. And they were very respectful to him in the recognition of who he was, the great man that he was. So skipping a little bit here, so the Gemara says that Yeshua ben Prachya turned to his student and said, "V'kamishtaba kama noa achsanyazu." Apparently the head of the hotel, or the person who was running things, was a woman. And this woman had given the royal treatment to Yeshua ben Prachya, and he turned to his student and said, "Kama noa achsanyazu," which literally means, "How nice is this hostess? How nice is she? She's so nice." To which the Gemara says, "Amalei echad mekalmidav." So one of his students who was with him turned to him and said, "Rebbe, einea trutos." One of the students turned to him and said, "She's not so nice. Her eyes are a little crooked." In other words, as if to imply that when he said, "How nice is she?" he was commenting on her physical appearance. He was commenting on her beauty, which wasn't what he was saying. He was saying, "Kama no, she's so nice." But this student, who apparently, you hear what you want to hear, so he interpreted that statement to be, "Oh, she's so beautiful." So he said, "Nah, I've seen better. You know, her eyes are too rounded," Rashi says, whatever. There's not some sort of imperfection. So the Gemara says, Armalei, so Yeshua ben Prachya said to his student, he got very upset. He said, "Russia, bekach ata osek." He said that this is what you're thinking about. And Rashi explains, Mistakel ve'eshes ish, Rashi says on the top of the saying, as a married woman, on top of everything else, a married woman. And this is where your thoughts lie in this situation? This is what you're thinking about? As a married woman, how can you even think of such a thing? So, but he called him a Russia. And not only that, says the Gemara, but he put him in Cherem, Shamte, says the Gemara says further, that he put him in Cherem. Now, the Gemara does not name who this Talmud was. The Mesorah that exists in Klal Yisrael for as far back as it could be checked is that this student was the man who we call Yeshua Nozri, that he was originally a yeshiva bacher, and he studied under Yeshua ben Prachya, and this is what happens. So the Gemara proceeds to say that kol yoma asul kamei v'lo kibwe, so the student came every day to Yeshua ben Prachya to ask him for forgiveness. He came to ask him for mechila, but Yeshua ben Prachya took the hard line and said, "I can't forgive him so easily," and he pushed him away. He would not accept it. He refused to deal with him. So finally, says the Gemara, Yom Echad, finally the day came that Yeshua ben Prachya said to himself, enough is enough. If he, at this point, from here on, he got the message, he learned his lesson, and if he's now going to come and ask me for forgiveness, I will forgive him. However, as fate would have it, the Gemara says, Habikokari Kriyashma. Yeshua ben Prachya came, the time came to recite Kriyashma, and Osul Kamei, and just at that moment, this student approached him. Habibidaitakabule says the Gemara that Yeshua ben Prachya was ready to forgive him, but he was in the middle of saying Kriyashma. So Achvale Biyode, so he made a motion with his hand, which implied, like, wait a minute, you know, just let me just finish. However, the student did not interpret that correctly either. Apparently he was out of line. He was not in sync with his Rebbe on anything. So he thought that this wave of the hand was get lost. You know, that's it. I've had it with you. So the Gemara says, So that's it. So the Gemara says that he left and he basically went off to Derech altogether. At a future point, Yeshua ben Prachya encountered him and tried to get him back, and to which this Talmud already had gone off onto his own endeavors. So the Gemara concludes by saying, So when they finally were able to converse, apparently time had passed. This Talmud had already gotten involved in his own endeavors, and Yeshua ben Prachya said, "All right, I'll take you back now." To which he said that one thing I remember learning from you is that kolachoti umachti asarabim ein maspikim biyodo lasas tshuva. That a person who sins and causes others to sin cannot do tshuva. And this is a statement in the Chazal which has to be understood in its own right, but the fact is he said, this I heard from you and therefore I'm too far gone, I can't come back. And this is the sad story in the Gemara from which the Gemara concludes that the purpose of the reason why this story is mentioned in the Chazal is to teach us a lesson that Yeshua ben Prachya, in the view of the Chazal, went too far, that he was too strict, that he shouldn't be that way, that even though he had the right to be upset with his student, but at the same time, you can't be so tough. You have to be yamin makarit. While you're pushing him away with your left hand, you have to be makarit him with your right hand. That's what the Gemara says. How is this tying to our shir? As I mentioned, the Mesorah that we have is, and this is found in the Chesronos Hashas, in the book that I referred to earlier, in a similar story in the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin, and it's found in the Chesronos, not in, that's found entirely in the Chesronos Hashas, that this Talmud was the person who was popularly referred to as Yeshua Notzri. As such, says Rav Avadia Yosef in the Sefer Yabia Omer, that he says, I don't agree with the Maram Shik's ruling that going by the secular date, that saying today is the beginning of 2012, is not a violation of Shem Elohim Acherim Lo Saskiru, because this is erroneously associated with Avodah Zarah. Why? Because if we look in Pirkei Avos, we will see that Yeshua ben Prachya was the Rebbe of Shimon ben Shatach, the other person mentioned here in the Gemara. And then if you look at the Mesorah as it's presented, you will see that a generation or two later was Shmaya and Avtalion. Shmaya and Avtalion were the Rebbeim of Hillel and Shammai. Right? And Hillel and Shammai lived in the last 100 years before the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. And that is closer to the time that the Christians say was the time of Yeshua Notzri. So it is impossible to say that he lived in the time that the Christians say, because he would have been 150 years old or more than that even, but 200 years old at the time that they claimed that he died based on this Gemara. Yes, I'm sorry, guys, please.
Just for clarification.
Yes.
Yanai
yes.
ruled from 103 to 76 BCE.
Yanai, okay.
And then when he died, his wife,
Shalom Tzion,
right. ruled from 76 to 67.
Okay.
So this is the period that you're talking about, way before zero.
Way before zero, right? Okay, thank you very much. So therefore, it would have been. You're talking about a period that's long before the Christian claim that Yeshua Notzri lived. Right. Thank you. Yes.
Here's what we're saying. Who cares? So we know all the Buddhas are as false. So
okay. We'll get to that. Okay. Good. We'll get to that. So based on this, so now it happens to be that if you take out the history books, you will see, and you take out some Jewish history books, there's a big Chalukei Deos. There's a very big dispute, between clearly the Christian historians don't say this. It is though mentioned. I didn't read it directly, but I saw online that in the Gospels it says that this time frame was the time frame of King Herod of Hordas, which was again later than the time that's mentioned here. Yeshua ben Parachia was at an earlier time, was at several generations prior to that, and Herod, therefore that's the claim. Yes.
Herod was in the year 6.
Okay, 6 BC. So much later. Thank you. That's great. What? Okay. I'll get to your point in a minute. So therefore, on this basis, the claim that Rav Avi Yosef says he doesn't see the Shiloh, because this is not accurate. So the big deal. This is what they say. This is what they say. Maybe they have their own agenda for saying it. But it's not accurate. So therefore, the year 2012 is really 2012 from nothing. In other words, it's random, the date. It's not a reference to the Avodah Zarah, because of the fact that that's not the time that was the time of Yeshua Nozri. This is the claim that he makes. Now, as was just mentioned, this point, you could argue, and you could say that, well, that might not make a difference, because the fact is that it's an association. So even if they're wrong, but that's what they think, and that's what everybody thinks. They have, let's say that they're wrong. So therefore, but they've convinced the world to go by their dating system. So if the Isser is Shem Elohim Acherim Lo Saskiru, so it comes to mind. It comes to mind when you say this. So what's the difference? In other words, here Rav Avi Yosef is saying that it's not accurate. So what's the big deal? But the question is, so what if it's not accurate? This is what they're telling us. So on this point, there is a debate. One of the contemporary poskim just passed away not too long ago, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg in Yerushalayim, the great poskim, the recent era. So in his Svarim Tzitz Eliezer, he says that who even says the Maram Shik is right? In other words, when you write the date, do you ever think what you're dating? In other words, if a person were to write something, say, writes January 1st, 2012, or 1-1-2012, does anybody stop and say, oh yeah, 2012 from that? So, therefore, a lot of people don't even think about it. So, the argument that this is Shem Elohim Acherim Lo Saskiru, that you're conjuring up images of Avodah Zarah, you're giving credence to Avodah Zarah, is debatable, because Rav Avi Yosef says that it's not accurate anyway. And even though the counterpoint to that is, so what, but that's what people think. So Rav Waldenberg says, but who thinks that? Nobody thinks when you write a date. You think about it, you just put down the date, whatever, this is the system that the world goes by. So it's arbitrary, it's great, what it be it as it may, but this, that's what I'm writing down, so what's the big deal? So this is a first response to what the Maram Shik said. That's point number one. Okay, point number two is that we find that the Sefer Yerayim, this is number 5 here on the sheet. The Sefer Yerayim was written by one of the Rishonim. It's a commentary on the mitzvahs of the Torah. It goes into the dinim of the mitzvahs of the Torah. This was written by a German rabbi, Reb Eliezer of Mitz, Mainz, and he was a student of Rabbeinu Tam, so from the great era of the Baalei Tosfos. And he writes at the end that he's discussing this mitzvah here, and he says at the end, the last 4 lines, he says, "Venerally, deino iser la usul la haskir el shem haniten la elil la shem elohus shenitnu lo shem de mishamer elohus." Says the Sefer Yerayim that the chlal in general, the iser of shem elohim acherim lo saskiru, only applies if you're giving a title that refers to divinity. In other words, if you refer to an avodah zarah by, you know, by a name that is a name that somehow refers to it as God, that is when you violate the system. However, just simply to call an avodah zarah by its title, he says, would not be usur. That's what he says. Now, I don't know that this is the accepted opinion, but this is an opinion which perhaps Rav Yosef says that you could put this into the picture also, that when you're counting, so you're not saying that, you're not in any way saying that this is to the to some godly, the count of the back to the godly person. Now the truth of the matter is that, you know, in the dating system, some people would write AD, you know, which I believe means the year of the Lord. So if a person wrote that, that would violate what the Sefer Yerayim is saying. But being that when we write in a totally secular setting, we put down the number 2012, so we're not, it's nothing, we're just saying 2012 from the life of this person. We're not giving any honor, any glory, other than the fact that we're going by his life, but we're not attributing divinity to him directly, says the Sefer Yerayim, that also would be a heter, that would not mean a violation of this iser, and therefore on that basis also Rabbi Yosef says that one would be allowed to use the secular date. And finally, on this point, the other issue is that in general what the Maram Shik said was a chiddush in the first place. In other words, there are those who challenge his extension of the Gemara, because as we pointed out, the Gemara says that you shouldn't mention it, you shouldn't speak it out, you shouldn't write it. But to just simply refer to it indirectly, you're not saying the name of some god, of some avodah zarah. You're just saying the year 2012, and okay, yes, that is associated with something. That's too indirect, and therefore that would not be a violation of the iser either. So on these grounds, people, the contemporary poskim, take issue with what the Maram Shik said with his ruling, and they say that really there would be no problem mentioning the year. So that would take care of 2012. Now we get to the first part of the equation. What about January 1st? Or specifically, what about writing 1-1? So on this point, we have the other issue that the Maram Shik had mentioned, which is already, really, in this point, he has more friends, there are more people that would go along with this line of thinking, that a Jew is not supposed to number months other than the way the Torah numbers them. Right? The Ramban in his commentary to the Chumash on the Pasuk in Parashat Bo'achos Zelachem Rosh Chadoshim, the Ramban says that a Jew is supposed to always count his months in this order. Nisan is 1, Iyar is 2, Sivan is 3, etc. Right? And that's the way it's supposed to be. That he writes very strongly that it should be this way. Others in the poskim write that. And therefore the question is it right to number the dates the way, by putting today as January, representing that with the number 1? So here we have an interesting dispute. So Rav Avadi Yosef says that in fact that is something that we should take a little more seriously. So as far as the year 2012, that's no big deal. Yeah, that's no big deal. With all due respect to the Maram Shik, he says, but it's an extension, and it's not accurate, and for all the reasons that we mentioned. But as far as putting the number 1 to represent January or 2 to represent February, so he says that really a person shouldn't do, because of the fact that's not, the Torah says that's not the first month. So how do you call it the first month? And therefore, Rav Avadi Yosef says that it is preferable, if a person is writing a check or a contract and you're writing something today, instead of putting 1-1-2012, he should write out January 1, 2012. Because by using the secular name, he is avoiding the issue of calling this the first month. In other words, for a Jew to go ahead and say, this is the first month, he says that's really not such a nice thing to do, because the Torah says this is not the first month, so you should not give credence to that. This is what he says. Now, however, as we you can imagine that it wouldn't be so simple here. So Rav Waldenberg, who we referenced a moment ago, in his Sefer Tzitz Eliezer, says exactly the opposite. He says that a person should doctor write 1 and not write January. Why is that? Because apparently the research is that the month January is named after a pagan god. Right? Now we know that in the months of the secular year, not all the months are that way. Right? For example, most famously, right, the July and August are named after Julius Caesar and Augustus, right, the two Roman emperors, two of the Roman emperors, which is why they both have 31 days, because neither one wanted to be shown up, right? My month can't have less days than his month, therefore, even though the secular calendar, we alternate the months, 30 days, but the only 2 months that you have 31 days consecutively are the months July and August, so that's due to Roman politics. But that's not named after any gods. Okay, now the names September, October, November, December, if you're up on your Latin, you will know that the word September, Sept is, represents 7, Oct is 8, Nov is 9, and December, D-E-C, is 10, and that's because apparently in the original system there were 10 months in the year, and those months were months 7, 8, 9, and 10, so those months would not be a problem either. However, the month January, according to what I saw, the month January, March, May, and June are named after some sort of pagan gods or some sort of pagan rituals. And therefore, Rev Waldenberg says that you definitely should not write January. That would really be the Shemo HaNacherim Losaskiru, right? That you can't write that. That you're buying completely now. Now you're mentioning, unless you rely on what the Arame said, that I'm not attributing any, I'm just writing the name. But the fact of the matter is, that would be worse. So here we have the situation, right? So you have the Rav Yosef says that you should doctor write the number, you should doctor write the names of the months. Rav Waldenberg says the doctor should write the numbers. So what do we do? So it's hard to know. The fact of the matter is, I don't think most poskim really took this whole thing so seriously. I think that the consensus in the world is that, you know, look, this is just the means of doing business, or just the means of living. This is one of the challenges of being in Golis. You live amongst the guy, and you have to go with it. The dating system is a very important thing. It's a standard. It's a universal standard that we have to go by. And therefore, all right, it's not the biggest deal. And you know, if nobody thinks about it. You probably could put that into the picture. So Rav Yosef's thing that you should put the names of the months probably would be better than to, because Rav Waldenberg is saying that if you write the name out, so you're attributing Avodah Zarah, but we could rely on what we mentioned earlier, that nobody thinks that way anyway, that who thinks that? Nobody, you wouldn't know that today unless you look in the encyclopedia. Who knows what January is, right? So therefore, I believe the way it plays out in practice is this. Most people just don't care and do whatever they have to do. And I think that by the fact that most poskim don't make a big issue out of this, we don't hear a big complaint being made about this. So therefore, I think that, you know, we could just go by the status quo. However, if a person wanted to be a little bit, you know, on the frumer side of the equation, you wanted to say, well, I'm going to take this a little seriously. It sounds like what Rav Avadya Yosef said probably is more reasonable, that the person should write out January on his checks. I know, but personally, I've been doing that for a number of years. I try not to put the numbers. I would write today January 1st, 2012. You don't have to do that either. But that's what some people do, to say go by Rav Waldenberg. Okay, then you could. I saw there was a posting online that somebody suggested that if you want to balance out Rav Yosef and Rav Waldenberg, so you have to go by which month it is. In other words, January is a bad month because that's Avodah Zarah month. But December is a good month. So therefore, if you wrote the check yesterday after Shabbos, so you could have written out December 31st. But today, you have to write 1-1. Okay, you know, if you want to start making these cheshbonos, I think there are probably more important things to keep in mind than this. I'm sorry, Rabbi. Okay, so yeah, you could do that. Okay, some people do that. They don't write out the whole name. They just write Jan, J-A-N. Okay, you could do that. I don't know that it's made into such a big deal, but it is, there is, it's not nothing either. In other words, if a person wanted to be makbid or be a little more careful, so okay, so maybe it's better to write, like Rabbi Shaffin says, to write J-A-N or something like that, to write it out. But I think after everything's said and done, what really does come out is that the Klal Yisrael, the mitzvah of Achar Zelachem Rosh Chodesh, we have a system of dates also. So when we feel in the non-Jewish world we have no choice, you can't go and write Vav Teves Tav Shinayim Beis. If you wrote that on your check today, probably the bank would return it, right? If you put the date 5772 on the date, they'll say that that's too, you know, with Bank of America, not sure if they'll still be in business when that day comes. But the fact of the matter is that amongst ourselves, at least, in other words, we know that people send out invitations to weddings, bar mitzvahs, differences, so then everyone is careful that they put the Hebrew date on it. But even in correspondences, Jew to Jew correspondence, it's really the right thing to put the Hebrew date also. In other words, you're writing a check, you're writing a contract, you're writing who knows what. You're dealing in the secular world, so it's all fine and good. But Jews amongst Jews, why don't we ever think we should write the Hebrew date? You're writing a letter to somebody, you have a relative or something like that, or you're sending something in the mail, put down the Hebrew date. All you put down the English date, fine, but also put down the Hebrew date. What's so bad about that? Yes, I'm sorry.
I don't want to throw open a can of worms, but many of the Hebrew months are based on the Odah
Zohar. Okay, Tammuz, right, Tammuz. Okay, all right, so that does open up a can of worms. And being that worms aren't kosher, so and I'm not prepared to answer that question, so that is correct, that some of the Hebrew names, they were picked up in the Golos Bavel along the way, and therefore you could make the case about those names. But about that, apparently nobody has made an issue. I don't know why. It's a good question. I don't know why nobody made an issue about that. Yes, I'm sorry.
In Israel today, how do they handle the dates?
They go by the secular dates as well. I mean, the European system is you put the day of the month before the month, but other than that, they go by the same system.
What about celebrating anniversaries or birthdays?
Okay, thank you. Right, so that's also something. In other words, you ask a person, when is your child's birthday? Right, so if you ask the father, he won't know the English date either. Right, but if you ask the mother, the mother will say, oh, my kids were born on this day and this day and this day. And what about the Hebrew birthday? So the Hebrew birthday, most people are hard-pressed to know. They have to go out and buy one of those 100-year calendars to check up when the Hebrew birthday is. Right, so really, in other words, what comes out is that there, as much as it's mutter, you know, unless you want to be mahadir, you could try to avoid it, as I mentioned, the various ways, but the Hebrew date should be meaningful in some way. A person who celebrates, that's a very good point, a birthday, anniversary, things like that, why should it only be a yard site? Right, that's the one. The yard site, everybody knows, you go by the Hebrew date. They wouldn't go by the English date. No, that's chas v'shalom, wouldn't go by the English date. So what about persons alive? The person's alive also. So the birthday, anniversary, this is a great day. It's the day of my anniversary. So go by the Hebrew day. In other words, the fact that Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, to some degree, we should take seriously. And especially if we have the ability now that we have the degree of religious freedom that we have. So at least Jews amongst Jews. It doesn't have to be everything with the you want. Again, you have to, even if you'll say we have to put the secular date because everybody's so used to it that if you tell someone that the shul dinner is being held on the 18th day of Shvat, nobody will come because, right, they won't know when that is unless they have yard sight on that day, right? Nobody will come. But the fact of the matter is that a person should there should be some awareness. This is, I think, the discussion of this topic, the secular day in Halacha. So at least in honor of the day that today represents, the New Year's Day in the secular calendar, we have at least some Chiddush HaTorah. Yes, Shabbat.